As we continue to follow the situation in Ukraine, we note that for a long time, Ukraine was known around the world as the home of the Chernobyl nuclear disaster back in 1986, a disaster that made people rethink the safety of nuclear power. Well, a similar event happened just about 3 years ago, almost to the day, when the earthquake and tsunami in Japan caused the Fukushima nuclear meltdowns there. That's led to a lot of debate about nuclear energy in Japan, but here in the U.S., the Obama administration has given the go-ahead for construction of the first nuclear facilities in almost 30 years. Joining us now to talk about nuclear power and a whole lot more is the U.S. Secretary of Energy, Ernest Moniz. Mr. Secretary, welcome.
Thank you, Jeremy.
How important is nuclear power in the future for the energy use in this country?
Well, nuclear power clearly is one of the important so-called zero-carbon options. It does not emit carbon dioxide, obviously, as does fossil fuel combustion. So our view remains that, A, we need to go to a low-carbon energy system over these next 10, 20 years. The solutions for a low-carbon system will look different in different places. Some countries, including industrial countries, will not have nuclear. Others will continue to grow it because it is one of the low-carbon options, and different societies have different public attitudes, but they also have, frankly, just very, very different core energy resources. So it will be multiple solutions in multiple places. Nuclear power, I expect, will be part of that mix.
But part of that mix, how much of that mix? I mean, do you expect us to see a lot more plants being built in this country in the years ahead?
In the United States, I think the long-term trajectory remains quite uncertain, to be honest. We have four of the new generation nuclear power plants with advanced safety features, so-called passive safety features, under construction. I believe that the future will depend to a very, very large extent on how these plants do in terms of meeting cost and schedule. That has obviously been a major issue with some of the last generation of nuclear power plants being built. It will clearly depend upon the rapidity with which we move towards zero carbon electricity. It will depend upon the extent to which fuel diversity is going to be valued by the utilities and by the citizens. That is, today, of course, we see a very strong move towards natural gas. Some parts of the country are very concerned about an overdependence upon any fuel and will look for more fuel diversity.
When you say fuel diversity, by the way, every time we talk on this show about nuclear power, many people write to us and say, why aren't they using thorium? Is that an alternative that you see?
Well, thorium is certainly an alternative. I personally don't see a strong motivation for the United States to move to thorium at the moment. We certainly are not constrained by a lack of uranium, first of all. Second of all, if we go to thorium, we would have to go to what's called a recycling approach, because thorium itself does not produce energy. You have to make uranium-233 out of it. So personally, I believe that right now the issue is to see how these new plants perform, in particular in terms of their cost performance. And we have plenty of uranium to continue with our current cycle.
You mentioned natural gas, too, something that's been talked about a lot, and many people have concerns about fracking that is used to get that natural gas. Are you concerned about it?
Well, of course, we are concerned in the sense that we need to keep working to reduce the environmental footprint of all of our production technologies. That certainly includes hydraulic fracturing. Our view remains that the environmental issues in terms of production are understood. They are sometimes challenging, but they are certainly manageable. We have to have best practices employed. The key issue is still the rather old-fashioned question of you have to be able to complete your wells, to have your wells integral, use best practices in so-called well completion. There are many other challenges, methane emissions. Again, we know how to capture the methane and reuse it. In my view, we have to do more of that. We have to work to try to reduce some of the local air quality impacts. For example, we could use some of that methane to use natural gas engines to drive the process rather than diesel engines. So there's a whole bunch of steps we have to take. The key in the end is implementing best practices very consistently with a strong regulatory regime with whatever combination of state and potentially federal, especially on public lands, federal regulation is called for.
But do you think in this case, in the case of fracking, that the industry got out ahead of the regulation, that a lot of stuff is being done before there are adequate regulations and restrictions in place?
I think we should not underestimate the strength of the regulations in many states. Clearly, it's been largely state-based. As the number of wells drilled increases dramatically, clearly the regulatory regime is evolving with it. But I don't think we should overestimate that feature that you referred to. It is true that the production has expanded very, very rapidly, and it's had a number of issues. For example, the energy infrastructure has not really been able to quite catch up. That's developing. It's largely in the hands of the private sector. But we have to also recognize in this discussion the enormous economic impact that this has had, first of all, not only in terms of having much more modest natural gas prices than we had years ago, with implications for consumers, for industry. It's driven new manufacturing. And secondly, we should also remember that the natural gas revolution, if you like, principally through its substitution for coal in electricity, has accounted for a significant part of our reduced carbon dioxide emissions. So we've had environmental benefits, we've had economic benefits. We have to, at the same time, continue to work to keep reducing the environmental footprint of production.
We're speaking with U.S. Secretary of Energy Ernest Moniz, and we invite you to join the conversation. What do you think about nuclear power? Do you think the U.S. should be building new reactors, as is happening in the South, or should plants be decommissioned, as happened recently in Southern California? And do you agree with Secretary Moniz when he says that the natural gas revolution in this country has been good for the reduction of carbon emissions? Weigh in at hereandnow.org. This is Here and Now. It's Here and Now, and let's get back to our conversation with U.S. Secretary of Energy Ernest Moniz. Before the break, we were talking about nuclear power and gas production in the United States. And Secretary Moniz, a lot of listeners are probably wondering, why aren't we talking about solar and wind more? When is that going to become a really significant part of the energy production in this country?
First of all, the growth has been very, very dramatic, really. In the last 4 or 5 years, we have seen a doubling of wind and solar. We expect another doubling over the next several years. Last year, we had 2,300 megawatts of large-scale solar alone put in place. What we are seeing with wind, I mean, in particular, onshore wind, and with solar, is that costs have come down pretty dramatically. And with that cost reduction is coming rapidly increased deployment. Now, obviously, in both cases, we're talking with relatively small market share today, a few percent for wind and still less than 1%, I believe, for solar. But the rate of growth is very dramatic. I mean, we are looking by 2030 to having a very, very large fraction of our capacity in wind, solar, and other renewables.
What do you mean by very large fraction?
30%, 40%. So I think this is getting to be, it's going to be quite quite large. Another interesting point, by the way, is that if you take wind, only a few years ago, about 25% of the supply chain for our wind deployments was U.S. Now we're approaching three-quarters of the supply chain domestically. We are somewhere between 200 and 250,000 U.S. jobs in the wind and solar industries. These are becoming very material industries and very material sources of energy.
Well, and if you drive through the state of Texas, you will see it right there in person, just miles and miles and miles of wind farms in part of the state. And they just go on and on and on. I want to bring you back, though, to nuclear, Mr. Secretary, and ask you about waste. Where does it go? We have this situation right now in Carlsbad, New Mexico, with workers being exposed to elevated levels of radioactivity at an underground repository there of nuclear waste.
With regard to nuclear waste, this clearly remains a major challenge. The administration and I personally continue to think that Yucca Mountain is not a workable solution, but rather a consent-based process, as was recommended by the Blue Ribbon Commission on America's Nuclear Future, is the right approach. And that report and the administration's recommendations are that we start to pursue in parallel not only geological repositories for very, very long-term storage, but also consolidated storage where we can start moving fuel away from nuclear reactors, presumably under federal control, so that we can have substantial, maybe 50 to 100-year scale storage prior to emplacement in a repository. Now, you mentioned the repository in New Mexico. We should clarify that that is not a repository for nuclear spent fuel, so-called high-level waste or spent fuel. It's for what's called transuranic waste. It's much lower activity waste. And there was some kind of incident that, I'll be honest, we don't fully understand at this stage. On February the 14th, the facility acted the way it was supposed to. When the radiation below ground was released, the bioassays have confirmed that 13 workers have some exposure. Obviously, we're very hopeful that there will be small exposures. Certainly, there's no indication today that anything like public exposures have occurred. But I will be very clear. We are going to continue to take samples of a broader population, make sure we can be assured that there was no greater exposure.
But where are you going to put the waste of future? If it's not going to be in Yucca, where's it going to go?
Well, that's going to depend upon what we hope will be a new consent-based process that will, in parallel, pursue both this longer-term storage as well as disposal. Now, obviously, I can't name a place today until that process is followed. And the commission, the Blue Ribbon Commission that I alluded to earlier, made it clear that in order to implement the new system, if you like, that congressional action would be required. It has been encouraging, in the Senate in particular, a bipartisan group of senators is advancing legislation along these lines. I'm hoping that legislation at least similar to that can be enacted and that we can start on the job of looking for geological repository sites and establishing in parallel these consolidated storage sites to get the spent fuel away from our reactor sites.
One more question, Mr. Secretary. We can create all the energy that we want in this country, but many will say we're losing so much of it on our outdated grid. We lose a lot of it on the power lines. What do you do about that?
Well, first of all, efficiency, much more broadly than our grid, is a very, very important direction. We've made it a very, very high priority at the Department of Energy. It's across the board, so I'd like to just emphasize the importance across the board, as I say, of energy efficiency.
You mean consumers using it or businesses using it as well? That's just as
correct.
Much of a problem.
Yeah. So we have, in fact, just issued another standard for freezers, so many appliances, et cetera, requiring higher efficiencies. We are seeing, I think, that we are at the beginning of a true revolution in lighting as LED lighting costs are plummeting and the payback periods, I believe, within this year, payback periods will reach 1 year for LEDs using about one-sixth of the electricity required for incandescents. We are seeing tremendous strides in vehicle efficiency. It's really across the board in buildings and appliances and vehicles, in industry, by the way, where, of course, it goes right to their bottom line, the energy savings. Now, the grid is a very important part of that. And I might say this year, 2014, we will be having a major focus on our energy infrastructure, including the grid. And the aims are to have the grid be smarter, be more efficient, be able to integrate, for example, large-scale renewable sources into the grid, but also to be much more resilient against the variety of risks that we have to the energy infrastructure, be it extreme weather. And, of course, we saw lots and lots of outages over the last weeks with the polar vortex events.
Right.
But we have cyber threats. We have physical threats. And we have the threats, you might say, from the very interdependence of energy infrastructures, such as in Superstorm Sandy, we saw how electricity outages very, very much complicated the life of being able to move transportation fuels to where we needed them.
Right.
So there's a whole set of threats. We are looking kind of in an integrated way at how we address the economic, the environmental, and the resiliency aspects of the electricity grid of the 21st century.
Ernest Moniz is the U.S. Secretary of Energy. Ernest Moniz, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much.
And again, let us know your thoughts about anything we've heard here today from Secretary Moniz. You can go to hereandnow.org and leave a comment on our website. You can also tweet us at Here and Now. I'm at Jeremy Hobson. Robin is at Here and Now Robin. You're listening to Here and Now.